Just before we put this begin, I just want to apologize, which of course is a really not great way of opening a shiur, but just now the 5:30 daily slichos in the morning are starting to hit me a little bit. So if I start drifting off in the middle of this year, or if you start drifting off in the middle of this year, so please accept my apologies in advance. Okay, I want to speak to you about an idea that I've been thinking about the last couple weeks, which quite honestly means a lot to me, not because I thought about it or because it's my idea, but something that feels at least like it resonates certainly with me, hopefully with you as well. And even if it's not exactly pshat in the Rambam we're going to talk about, but certainly as far as what this idea might mean for our lives and for this process of tshuva. Okay, I want to begin with a couple of questions, and I'm sorry that I don't have handouts to provide you. But just for a second, and Baruch Hashem, when I speak here, so I always know that I'm surrounded by Talmidei Chachamim, so you don't have to explain a lot. But anybody want to tell me, what's the first perek of the Rambam's Hilchos Teshuva about? The first perek speaks about the major theme, is that of Vidoy. Right? The Rambam, of course, begins Perek Aleph, Kishayatza Adam Teshuva, when a person does Teshuva, Chayov lehisvados, he has to admit his sins. And the rest of the Perek Aleph deals with the various ways, mechanisms, means of doing Vidoy. What does Perek Beis deal with? So Perek Beis, which probably one would say is the essence of Hilchos Teshuva, deals with the personality of the Baal Teshuva, Teshuva Me'ava versus Teshuva Me'ira, what's considered to be Teshuva Gemura, complete Teshuva. Like Perek Beis is almost like the, if you have to like shine a light on one Perek, and Hilchos Teshuva really talks about the essence of that process, that would be Perek Beis. Perek Gimel at the beginning discusses the idea of the weight system, that a person should view themselves as being 50-50 and the Beinoni, and the rest of the Perek deals with those people that cannot do Teshuva. Perek Dalet deals with all the various aspects that are the 24 different things, qualities, midos, that are monea a person, that stops a person from doing Teshuva. Those are the first four praktim. Vidoy, the essence of Teshuva, the scale, who does not get to do tshuva, and what are those things that are monea tshuva. Then the Rambam, of course, in Perek He and Perek Vav, almost takes a little bit of a detour and discusses Bechir Choshes, discusses the idea of free choice. And if a person just peruses, and I'll read a little bit of it, the first of those prakim, Perek He, the Rambam says, Rishus kol adam nesun alo, a person has absolute rishus, they have absolute permission, they have all the channels, all the doors, all the mahalchim open to them. Imrotza lahatos, atzmo l'derech tova, if he wants to be a good guy, rishus biyado. Imrotza lahatos, atzmo l'derech ra'av, l'zrasha, rishus biyado, if he wants to be an evil person, he can do that as well. That's halacha aleph. Halacha beis, the Rambam says, al yavur b'machshav azazcha, do not think, Dover zeh omrim tifshei ha'umos, some of the tifshei ha'umos, which by the way for the Rambam might be like one of the worst insults. You know, those people, the nations of the world who are tipshim, who are foolish, and also another word that for the Rambam might be like a statement, you know, if you really want to curse somebody out in the eyes of the Rambam would be this, Verov golmei b'nei Yisrael. What's a golem b'nei Yisrael? Rov golem b'nei Yisrael? What would you define that as? What's that? Yeah, basically brainless. You know, people who's like someone who's like a lump of clay. You know, someone who just does not have a thought in their head. Don't be like Rov golem b'nei Yisrael, that they say Shekadosh Baruch Hu gozer al ha'adam meitchilat b'riyaso, that a person says that God has been gozer, God has decreed on a person, liot tzaddik or rasha. There are those people who think that God has decreed what path this person is going to be, whether it be a tzaddik or rasha. Ein hadavar kein. The Rambam says it's absolutely not true. By the way, anybody have a question on this Rambam? He says, don't be like the Golmei Yisrael who believe that Kosh Baruch Hu was gozer on a person to be a tzaddik or rasha. It's a question perhaps we're thinking about. Why would, what would be the source, what would be the basis that Rov Yisrael would think that? What might be the indication in Chazal that so many Jews are thinking that a person is gozer, a person is decreed from their birth? And that's a question we're thinking about. Why would people be led astray in this area? So the Rambam continues in Halacha Beis, El kol adam v'adam roi lio tzadik Moshe Rabbeinu, a person can be like a tzadik, o rasha ki yiravam, o chacham, o sikel, he can be wise, he can be foolish, o rachman, o achzari, a person can be in their lifetime a merciful person, in achzari, a person without mercy, and on the Rambam goes, v'chein shar kol hadeos. Okay, that's Halacha Beis. And then the Rambam says in Halacha Gimel, v'ikar zeh, Iker Godol Hu, and right away when you see the Rambam using this language, sort of, you know, for those of you who are here, you know, Jakey and Alex and Nadie, Yitzi and others, you know, if Rav Rosenzweig was reading this Rambam, which he has, you know, a few thousand times, I'm sorry, Rav Rosenzweig, if you listen to that, but, you know, when you see this language in the Rambam, so immediately the antenna goes up, right? Because when you see the Rambam using a language of the ikur zeh, ikur gadol hu, it's almost as though your Rambam is coming with like four underlines and a highlighter of what to be focusing on. And also, amud ha-Torah va-mitzvah. This is the foundation of all of Torah mitzvah that a person can choose. Shenema re'ein asati l'fanecha hayom es ha-chayim ves ha-tov. And the Rambam says, because of this free choice, therefore a person should do tshuva. Because a person can't say, I was forced, or God made me, or God this. No, no, no. Your decisions are your own. And therefore, it's incumbent upon you to do tshuva. Anybody have a question on the Rambam? And there are questions you can ask on this Rambam that are specific and limited to the specific comments that the Rambam makes. And there's questions you can ask on this Rambam that are broader, and perhaps something that looks at the Sefer as a whole. So anybody have a question on this Rambam? The question that I have, and that I've had before, and I'd be curious if you think it's a question, is that the Rambam, let's say especially in Sefer Madom, when he begins his series of halachos, the Rambam does so with a flare, and with a bang, and with a statement of announcing to the world what is the most critical part of the Sefer. Does anybody know the first line of the Rambam's halachos of Yesodei HaTorah? So he says, Yesod ha-Yesodos, it is the absolute foundation that there's a God and that God created the world. And the Rambam starts Yesodei HaTorah with the absolute statement of what is going to be the theme of Yesodei HaTorah. And that's true by Hilchos Avodas Kochavim, where he speaks about Avram Avinu and the birth of Avodah Zarah. It's true when it comes to Hilchos Deos, where the Rambam lays out the whole idea of ethics. And the question that I have is, why wouldn't the Rambam begin his sefer about tshuva speaking about free choice? You have absolute free choice. That is the foundation of so much of Yahadus, so much so that the Barbanel actually asks, how come free choice is not one of the Yud Gimel Ikarim of the Rambam? And because you have absolute free choice, you're responsible for your actions. Therefore, let us embark on this process of tshuva that I'm going to speak about for the next 10 prakim. But rather, what does the Rambam talk about? When you do tshuva, this is how you have to do vidoy, and this is how you're mizvada your sins. Everyone hear the problem? Wouldn't the Rambam have gained so much more by starting the entire sefer with Bechir Chavshis? Okay? Everyone hear that question? Question number two, and then maybe we'll give an answer to both those questions, is that if you go through a number of halachos in the Rambam introduces concepts that it's not even clear where he finds them from, and where he finds those concepts from. And he discusses tshuva in a way that brings almost a certain emotional drama, a certain drama to the process of tshuva. So for instance, the Rambam says, how does a person do vidoy? He says, Omer, Ana Hashem, Chatosi, I have sinned, Avisi, Pashati, Lefanecha, Vasisi kach v'kach, I've done such and such. Vahareini chamti, I feel bad about it. Uboshti b'maasai, I'm embarrassed. Ulaolam eini chozer davar zeh. I'm not going to do it again. Zehu ikaro shel vidoy. This is the ikar of vidoy. V'cholamarba lihizvados marach b'inyon zeh hari zeh mishubach. The more you talk about it, the better. If you want to give 97 different words of what you've done, and to spend all day there saying vidoy and davening with your parents looking at you like you're crazy, he says hari zeh mishubach. The more, the better. Now, anybody know which word in the Rambam raises the questions of the Meforishim? This is how you do vidoy, chatasi, avisi, pashati, nichamti, uboshti, etc., etc. Anybody know which of those words does not appear in the Bavli? So the word uboshti, I'm embarrassed about it. And the Meforishim say, why does Rambam have to include that? You can go to Kosh Baruch Hu and say, I've done such and such, I'm making a commitment for the future, without the guilt and the shame and the embarrassment. Why does that have to be introduced into vidui? Okay, another Rambam. The Rambam says, by the way, that Rambam I mentioned is Perek Aleph Halacha Aleph. The Rambam says in Perek Dalad Halacha Dalid, Midarche Hatshuva Lios Hashav Tzoek Tamid Lifnei Hashem Bebechi Ubetachanunim. It is the Darche Hatshuva. It is the proper Mahalach, the proper way that a person who's chozer b'tshuva should be tzoek tamid, screaming out, crying out, lifnei Hashem, bevechi, with tears, b'tachanunim, v'oset tzedakah, misra'alek harbe min hadavar. The person has to be crying out. And the Meforishim once again say, why? And where does the Rambam even get this from? That it's a darche hatshuva, a person has to be screaming and crying and calling out? Okay. Another halacha in the Rambam. The Rambam, there's a very famous machlokas between the Rambam and the Meiri, and Sir Rabbeinu Yonah gets thrown in the mix. People know, by the way, there are three major Rishonim who discuss tshuva. The Rambam, of course, in Hilchos Tshuva. The Meiri has a sefer called the Chibur HaTshuva. And Rabbeinu Yonah, of course, is Rabbeinu Yonah. So anybody know what's one of the major machlokas in between the Rambam and the Meiri in regards to tshuva? So, yeah, nothing? Right, so that's actually a very famous machlokas also. The Rambam sort of seems like he's like an all or nothing absolute, where Rabbeinu Yonah and the Mabit and others say, no, you can sort of do like a chatzi tshuva. Yeah, please, Mr. Gore.
I'm not sure if this is right, but I think maybe the order.
Correct. It's absolutely correct, right? So the Rambam says that the order, and the Rambam says this in Perek Beis Halacha Beis, is first a person says an aziva sacheit. There's no point in doing tshuva holding like a cheeseburger in your hand, saying, well, tomorrow I'll put down the cheeseburger. No, no, no. There has to be an immediate aziva sacheit. And then there has to be, the Rambam says, a kabbalah ala asid. In the future, I commit also to not doing something. And the Rambam says, after all that, you have charata. You have a certain regret. And the Meiri has, which I would imagine most of you would think is logical, the sort of a different order. First comes charata. I regret it. I stopped doing it, and I have a kabbalah, I lost it. I'm not going to do it again. The Rambam has charata afterwards. What most Meforishim seem to assume in the Rambam is that charata is not part of the essence of the ma'isa tshuva. The ma'isa tshuva for the Rambam is stopping doing the Avera and acceptance for the future. The charata is almost like the throw-in, the last point of it. And the question is, what is that? For the Rambam, why would the charata be last, and what's the charata exactly accomplishing? And lastly, another sort of this very, almost like emotional and a very dramatic statement of the Rambam is a statement that probably all of you know. The Rambam says in Perek Gimel Halacha Dalid that even though Tekiyah Shofar is a Gezeiras HaKasuv, it's a Pasuk, we know there's a sort of like a remez, and that is the idea of Ur Yushein Mishnosechem, wake up you sinners from your slumber, and the Shofar is there to like jar a person awake from their slumber. And by the way, the question could be why the Rambam has this right in the middle paragimel, right? And what exactly is going on? These are four different examples of the Rambam, who we tend to think about sort of being an intellectual person in many ways, giving tshuva an emotional charge. It has to come with a busha. The person who is a chozer b'tshuva needs to be tzoek tamid bebechi v'tachanunim. It has to come with charata as like the closing part of that process. The shofar is there to rouse a person from their sleep. And the Pashup Shah, what you would say is that, of course you need all of that. You know, we're trying to reconnect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's not enough that this is just a dry process. It needs to come with busha, it needs to come with bechi, it needs to come. You think about an image of a wife who's thrown their husband out of the house. Oh, it's usually never the reverse. It's almost never the husband throwing the wife. It's always the wife who throws the husband out of the house, and the husband comes back. You know, it's not enough to make like a dry list of, well, I stopped doing X, and I commit for the future. There has to be a busha and a bechia and a tzoek and all those things. And maybe that's true here as well. But maybe there's something more than just all of that. Okay, so those are the two questions. Question number one is, why does the Rambam begin with Bechir Chavshis? And number two, why have all this sort of emotional, dramatic process in the Rambam? So let's go back and think about a different issue in the Rambam and a different question. And by understanding that last Rambam, we can go back and understand a little bit of this conception of Bechira. Now, one of the famous questions posed by the Rishonim, and it's a question which has been posed ad nauseum, is based, of course, in the Pasuk, at the beginning of the process of Yitzis Mitzrayim, Vani Akshes Leif Paro, V'hir Besi, Yeso Sasai, V'es Mopsai, V'eris Mitzrayim. I will, in the future, harden Paro's heart, which came after, if I remember, which Makkah, the Kadosh Baruch Hu come in and harden Paro's heart, remember when that was? That was after the sixth Makkah. And then I will demonstrate my osos, etc., in Mitzrayim. Now, this is such an obvious, famous question that the Medrash comes and says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mikan Pischon Pe Laminin. This is an opening of the mouth for those heretics to say, Lo Haisu Vimenu Sheyasa Tshuva. Paro can never done Tshuva. How can we punish Paro? Yada, yada. These are the questions that, you know, every camp session or shiur about Paro's lack of bechira. So Amar Lo Reish Lakesh, Yisasein Pihem Shominim. The mouths of these heretics should be closed, and he goes on to give an answer. Now, what's the most famous answer to this question of Paro's lack of bechira? It's really sort of two famous answers that are given. I mentioned a third one briefly, given by the Shadal. Shadal is probably not the name of someone that you hear a lot in yeshiva, unless you're taking, you know, Bible classes. Shadal was Shmuel David Lozado, who was a 19th century scholar, of course, from Italy. And Shadal said that really, Paro hardened his own heart, but everything is ascribed to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So, for instance, if let's say you assume, according to the Rambam, that there's such a thing called laws of physics and laws of gravity. So therefore, if I take, it is your phone, whoever's phone it is, and I drop it 10 feet, this is happening because of such a thing called laws of nature, laws of physics, laws of gravity. But a person might say, well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made that phone fall. And it wouldn't be totally wrong because we ascribe everything to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Paro hardened his own heart, but we ascribe that process sort of as everything, the first cause of everything being Ribono Shel Olam. Now, there's a problem with that Shadal. Anybody know what the problem is? Anybody? Yeah, so if that's the case, be consistent. Have all 10 of them being God hardened Paro's heart, or have all 10 being the Paro hardened his own heart. Why sort of make that change sort of like smack in the middle, so to speak, of the Makos? Okay, and he addresses that issue, and if you're interested, I can point you where to look for that. There's another, just very quickly, an answer given by Rav Yosef Albo in the Sefer Ikarim, by the Sforno, and probably most clearly by the Beis Halevi in Parsha Shmos, that the reason that Paro's heart was hardened was as a way of saying that when Paro finally does release the Jews, it would be done not out of fear, not out of punishment, but out of a certain Kabbalah, Shlomo Chashmayim, out of a certain sense of Kabbalah. You know, you can make your kid do anything when they're young enough. You can, Chas Hashem, you can smack your kid enough until he decides to go to shul. Okay, so he's going to shul. But, you know, make decisions in such a way that when he finally decides to go to shul, it's not because you're sitting there with like a broomstick, Chas Hashem, but it's because the person has decided to make certain decisions. And so to hear as well. Paro's heart was hardened so that the decision to release Bnei Israel could be done b'lev shalem and not just out of like a response to an onesh. Okay, and the third answer, and we know perhaps the most famous answer because it's provided by many Rishonim, The third answer is provided by the Ramban, namely that the lack of Bechira came as an onesh. He was given free choice, and then given free choice. He hardened his own heart. He was given free choice. He hardened his own heart, etc., etc. Until finally, Kosh Baruch Hu says, your punishment is that you've lost free choice. Okay. Now, that's said by the Ramban. And the Rambam also says, and I'll read to you the line of the Rambam. This is in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Vav, Halacha Gimel. Lefichach kosa b'torah, v'ani echazek es leiv paro. God says, I will harden the heart of paro. Lefichachata me'atzmo techila. First he sinned himself. V'heira l'Yisrael. He made things evil from Israel. And then, eventually, Nosan Hadin Limnoa Mimenu Hachuva Achen Nifroa Mimenu. Eventually, God says, you know what, you did it on your own. I'm going to punish you by taking away your Bechira Chavshus. Now, I'm not sure if anybody in this room has a problem with this Rambam, but there's always something about this Rambam that, not that I can be bothered with the Rambam, but I was bothered by something about this Rambam. And if, in fact, this is the question, it leaves us with an answer that is so fundamental and so yisodi as far as who we are and Bechira and Tshuva. Anybody have a question on this Rambam? The Rambam seems to be echoing the Ramban, although of course the Rambam lived before the Ramban, but the same idea, namely that Paro did something on his own and the punishment was a removal of that Bechira. Anybody have an issue with that? Perhaps nobody. And I actually spoke about this in our shul in Muncie, and most people do not seem to be bothered by this question. People smarter than myself, so maybe it's not a question. But it seems to me the following. The Rambam establishes as an absolutely fundamental point in Yahadus that a person always has Bechira Chavshis. Until the last moment of his life, he can turn his life around. Ad yom moso, etc. A person's paths are always open to him. And then, that's true, unless you're a really bad guy, and then we take away your Bechira. Does anything seem to be internally flawed with that idea? Bechira is an absolute fundamental of faith, until you've really messed up, and now we've stripped it from you. To me, it seems like if it's fundamental, then it's always fundamental. If tshuva's always an option, then Bechira always has to be there. What does it mean a Kosh Baruch Hu comes down and removes Bechira from a person? Yeah, Matthew?
Could you say, Paro wasn't Jewish, so...
So it actually, as un-PC as your answer is, and don't go back to Ramaz and announce that from, like, you know, the lectern, or else they'll shoo you out of there as just as quick as could be, but that is actually what some people give answers to. I forgot who said it, but I've seen before in Mepharshim, maybe even, like, skimming through the Frankel and some of the Ramakom was in the back, that some people say, yeah, there's a difference between a Jew and a non-Jew, but the problem is that if you go through the Rambam gives other examples of people also who tshuva have been like Monea from them. Some of them might have been Jewish. Okay, but you know, certainly that might be an approach. Okay? But I wanted to say something a little different, and this idea that I'm saying in the Rambam can be found in various places. And if you go through all of the Rambam on this topic, which is in Hilchos Tshuva and the end of Shmona Prakim, this position or this approach to the Rambam can definitely be supported. And I think it's an absolutely critical point. Namely, that's the following. Now, people may know in the world of philosophy, and I'm not sure how much people here have studied philosophy, there's two major questions and issues that come up about the question of free choice. What's the first question that most Rishonim and their cousins and uncles all speak about? Alex? So Alex says, how are we miyashev, so to speak, although that's not a philosophical word, how are we miyashev HaKadosh Baruch Hu's omniscience, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge of all future events, together with your free choice? And this is discussed by the Rambam and by the Ravid and many, many other Rishonim. Everyone's sort of taking different positions. If you're interested in this topic, there's a very famous and perhaps controversial opinion by the Rabag. But quite honestly, this is not a question that bothers me so much, because it's really a question in theology, right? Us knowing how a Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world and what a Kadosh Baruch Hu knows and what a Kadosh Baruch Hu sees, like, it's not something we can really know and doesn't really affect our own experience, our own sort of situation in life. I mean, it's like a theological, theoretical question. But the question that is very, very real and discussed also by the Rishonim is there really free choice? And is that free choice outweighed by a word that begins with a D? Anybody know what that word is? Determinism. Determinism means that if you, let's say, forget about this moment of time, but if you pull yourself back and you look at the entire world, creation of man, and on and on and on, down the line to now, Alex Lesney sitting in this room, based on who you are, based on where you were raised, based on your parents, based on all everything that's happened before you, do you truly have free choice in any decision that you make? Or is everything based on determinism? Essentially, every decision you can make has been determined already. The very fact, let's think about it in big ways. Being from or not being from. Being in NYU, not being in NYU. I mean, the thousand decisions, even as much as do you reach for Coke or do you reach for Pepsi? Do you do this or do that? How's a person wear their clothing? Almost every single decision in a certain way has been determined and brought about and is a reflection of a thousand different things, and therefore do you really have free choice? And if, let's say, the extent of the free choice you have is 5%, I really don't have free choice, but 5% of my brain can still make that free choice. I don't have free choice to stand up and go screaming out of this room, banging on the door, screaming, oh, I can't stand Rabbi Blass, but you know, 1%, I still have free choice to make that. That's not free choice. And basically, every decision that a person has, according to this school of thought, would say that either every decision in your life is determined, or it's determined in such a way that whatever level of free choice you have is not really significant. It's not sort of 50-50. Already so much of that has been determined from beforehand. Everyone understand that? Because that's a very critical point. And there's a huge discussion, both in Jewish philosophy and secular philosophy, of those people that say there's absolute free will. Those people are called the libertarians. People who say that everything is determined. And then those people that say that there might be some type of, like, you know, semi-ability to sort of combine the two of them. Anybody know an example of somebody that says that there is free choice, but free choice is very limited? Anybody know who in the Jewish world espouses that view in a very famous essay? Anybody? So that is the idea. Rav Dessler, exactly. So Rav Dessler wrote, obviously, Michtam Eliyahu. And Michtam Eliyahu, the most famous pieces are in Chelek Aleph. And probably the most famous piece in Michtam Eliyahu is something called the Kuntres HaBechira. Rav Dessler lays out a person's life, and obviously the ramifications of Rav Dessler are absolutely humongous, both in regards to Yadus and, let's say, in regards to the legal system. Because Rav Dessler says, Professor essentially says, and I imagine it's something that almost everyone here knows about, but let's say you're standing over here. We'll put Jed Zazar in here. Sorry, Jed. Okay. So let's say this issue that's down the road, we're going to point over here, right? Let's say this issue is, Jed, give us an example of something that's not even on your radar screen. Finishing Bavli and Yerushalmi by the time you're 23 years old. Okay, you could do it maybe, but okay. So that's somehow over here. That's not even something you have a chira over. It's not something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is judging you for. It's not something you're getting punished for. Because it's like all the way down on the other side of the football field. And therefore it's not even in the realm of something that you get an onish for. It's not something you have a chira for. And this probably encapsulates a good number of decisions in a person's life. Now, you also have this person standing on the 50-yard line, right? You have all these areas over here, which encapsulates a person's past. And let's say for many of us here, that would be whether it be Shomer Shabbos, whether we're tzitzis, whether to keep kosher, whether to marry a Jewish girl, all the things that for everyone in this room, it's also not subject to Bechira. It's not subject to Schar. It's not something you're getting rewarding for. But this is just your life, and therefore it's not subject to Bechira, and therefore also not subject to Schar and Onish. Okay, but anybody have a question on this before we move forward about the ramifications of this question, even beyond Yahadus or within Yahadus? The question would be, let's say if a person, okay, And you know, while we finish this, the only thing Rav Dessler says that a person really has bechira over in any meaningful way, and therefore schar v'onesh, are, let's say, this small box. And that small box may be, will I get up and get to minyan on time? You know, will I be makbid about a vak lashon hara for this year? The 6-7 things that are realistic for you, they're in front of you. It's not too much, and it's not behind you. There's a very, almost like a few yards of those things that are in the realm of bechira, and therefore in the realm of schar v'onesh. Okay? Now, one interesting question that based on this Rav Dessler, both in Jewish system and a legal system, is, does that mean for this person over here, and let's say this is your neighbor living in the middle of Manhattan, does that mean there's no onshim for not keeping Shabbos? And does that mean that we don't get any schar for keeping Shabbos? That seems to be what Rav Dessler says. Schar v'onesh is like a limited slice. And you can imagine in the legal system as well, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, a person who comes ahead and says, yes, chas shalom, person's not going to say that, I beat my wife, right? It's awful. But I was raised in a certain type of community. I never saw anybody in my life not abuse their wife or not hit their children. It was just part of the culture where I live from. Can we also, in the same way that we don't get schar for keeping Shabbos, and we don't get onshim for not finishing Bavli Yushalmi by 23, can we also say the person is not responsible because based on everything that has happened in their life to bring them to a certain point? Everyone understand all that? Sal, you want to, yeah?
Wouldn't that just be like what you called like a theological question, like before, like how like divine foreknowledge?
No, because this has nothing to do with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. I mean, okay, in theory, it doesn't do with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. It has to do with just being born into a world and every single thing that's happened until that point. But hold on to that question for 1 second, okay? Now, in the same way that it's true that life can sometimes be determined based on all the factors around a person, it's also true that a person, because of all the decisions that they have made in their life, have almost stripped themselves of their own bechira. So a person who spends their entire life and they were raised in a certain type of house, and their parents are, let's say, cynical people or negative people, and then for the last 25 years, you look around any shul you come from, a person has just become trained to become cynical or negative or using a certain type of language. And they do it year after year, and every single situation that comes up, their response to it is like a cynical response. So now, after 5,000 cynical, negative responses, by the time the next situation comes up, right, do they really have bechira of whether they're going to be full of rachamim and understanding and giving some benefit of the doubt, or they're going to be cynical? They've lost that bechira. They've stripped themselves of that bechira because of every single decision that they have made in their life leading up to whatever this next decision is. Everyone understand that? A person can make 1,000 decisions in their life until the point where they have stripped themselves of the ability to have complete free choice of right or wrong. Now, to a large degree, and I'm just going to read to you a quote that I saw in Shakespeare Quarterly. Okay? So in Shakespeare Quarterly, they're speaking about Macbeth. And the quote in Macbeth is, "Things bad begun make strong themselves by ill." Does this bring back any bad memories for someone, you know, in SAR and other places? Things bad begun make strong themselves by ill. In other words, a life has a certain momentum. So the author in Shakespeare Quarterly, commenting on that line of Macbeth, observes, gradually, he so hardens himself in the custom of evil that he becomes eventually incapable of altering the pattern in which his very being is fixed. The heart is so encumbered by the burden of its own fulfilled desires that it cannot be turned away from there. People make own decisions. They paint themselves into corners. They lock themselves into a certain life until a person, again, has become so encumbered that they've lost sort of a free choice and a bechira. Now, many people explain the Rambam and Pyro in exactly the same light. What does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardened the heart of Pyro? doesn't mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reached out and changed Pyro's heart. What it means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created a world, and Mitzal, maybe this is a little what you're saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created a world where people themselves strip themselves of the chibur. A person gets to a certain point where HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows a person to go down a certain path where they themselves has hardened their own heart. They've done it to themselves, but it's the way and the manner in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows that to happen. Where do we know that from? What's the source of that? So the Rambam himself, in speaking about this concept, mentions Reish Lakish, and I'll conclude this in a few minutes. And the Rambam says that based on Reish Lakish, Masechah Shabbos, Habol Tahir, what's the next word? Messiah Nusa. A person comes to purify themselves, HaKadosh Baruch Hu assists them. Habal utame, a person comes to make themselves impure, poskenlo. We allow the person to do it. Being HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows a person to lock themselves into a certain corner. And by the way, that idea is based on the pasuk of Im Laleitzim Hu Yalitz, Ula Novim Yiten Chein. If a person wants to be a late, what's a late? What's the best definition for that? A person wants to be a scoffer. He wants to make everything is like not serious. Hu yolitz. What does it mean, hu yolitz? So the way the Rambam and the way that the Gemara understands that means we allow the person. It doesn't mean that we punish him. It doesn't mean the way that the Rabbag says that other people scoff at him. Im laleitzim. If you want to scoff, hu yolitz. We allow you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows a person to go on a certain road in their life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows a person to be stripped of bechira, be stripped of a certain amount of clarity. That's what it means HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardened the heart of Paro in the idea of the Rambam. That was the Onesh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in such a way that Paro automatically hardened his own heart. Now, if that's the case, let's go back to the question. The question is, why would the Rambam place Bechira in the middle of Hilchos Teshuva and not at the beginning of Hilchos Teshuva? Because I think it's fair to say, at least for me, and maybe for many of you here as well, that at the beginning process of change and the beginning process of Teshuva, a person does not have Bechira Chavshus. A person has been stripped of Bechira. A person has stripped themselves of Bechira. And if you look at our own lives, or the lives of your families, or the communities, people have stripped themselves of Bechira. Think about an average person living in a religious, centrist Orthodox shul, in regards to the Shulchan Aruch. And you ask, how many people wake up every single day, in this the typical shul that probably many of you daven at, wash Negel Vasser, put on tzitzis, go to shul, daven three times a day. You know, this is the basic idea of what it means to keep like daily halacha. I'm not sure what the answer to that question would be. And the question is why? Is because people don't care? Of course people care. People are spending millions of dollars in yeshiva tuition and shul dues and a thousand other things. But people have just made decisions over the course of their life where they're not really free to choose because they've locked themselves into a certain type of life. Think about the Midah of Vatranus, person being Mevater. You think about how difficult it is for a person to be Mevater. Why? Because they don't value it. They don't think that they should just let things go and let it go. Of course people do, but a person becomes so locked into a certain life and a certain pattern that they have stripped themselves of Bechira. And therefore, at the beginning process of tshuva, a person doesn't really have bechira to say, this is exactly who I want to be, or this is who I want to be, or this is what I value, and this is what I don't value. And they'll have to clearly assess their own life because they have stripped themselves of bechira. That can only come, that bechira can only come once the process of tshuva has begun. Once a person has said, Nichamti uboshti, I'm embarrassed a little bit of what my life has become. Once a person is so ektamid, he says, you know, this is not exactly, if I have to do my life again, this is not what I would have chosen. Once a person has charata that's not related to the maisa tshuva, but charata on the totality of his life. Once a person has been awoken by the truest HaShofar, they can say, well, a second. This is not the person that I envision being, and this is not the person that I value. This isn't the person perhaps I want my kids to be. It's only then that he's been awoken to who he is. Only then can he reclaim his Bechira. But that only takes place at the end of that process of tshuva, or in the middle of that process of tshuva, but certainly not at the beginning of that process of tshuva. I want to give all of us a bracha. I know, I think everyone in this room, people here are amazing people. People are really working and growing. People are tremendous models to me and to their families and others. But to give a real assessment about what pieces of our lives have we fallen into? Have we painted ourselves into a corner? Have we just adopted certain decisions and a certain way of life? If we have to do it again, and we're given a chance to do it again, and this is the chance, today, tomorrow, Yom Kippur, who exactly would I want to be? And how to reclaim true Bechira in a person's life? All of us can have a year of enormous growth, of enormous meaning, and a year in which we've developed the clarity over our lives and the care in our lives to be able to make decisions between good and bad, between Chaim and Maves, and for all of us to have an incredibly meaningful and transformative Yimei Tshuva. Thank you, everyone.